The Bradley Effect. The Bradley Surprise. What's that have to do with faith? Also some time to digest what's been taken in as Domestic Violence Month, Awareness Month kicks off. This is Father Boskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, the physical, just about everything else. And I'm inviting you to take it with us, episode number 435 of The Next Step. Today's Next Step is sponsored by Predator Cycling, specializing in custom carbon bicycles, components, accessories, and repair. Pushing the limits of technology, derived from experience, created from passion, fabricated by cyclists for cyclists. Predator Cycling. Visit them at predatorcycling.com.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Vazgen provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The Next Steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready. We're taking the next step.
We read that we ought to forgive our enemies, but we do not read that we ought to forgive our friends. Cosimo de' Medici, from Letters. We do not read that we ought to forgive our friends. Interesting, huh? Different dynamics, right? Between friends, enemies. Think about that for a moment. Just caught me. Caught me this morning. But also the beautiful weather here in Southern California caught me too. Well, first of all, welcome. I'm glad you're with us. We've got all kinds of things we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about those dynamics. Oh, I went to court this week. Never been to court in my life, at least as a defendant. I've been at trials where I've had to testify, done all kinds of things, but went to court this week. I'm going to share with you some stuff about that. And also we're going to be talking about the nature of religious experiences, well, in connection with some of the world politics that we're seeing all around us. An interesting twist, and I'm going to share that with you coming up in the second portion of today's show, particularly in regard to what's going on with the phenomena of elections here in America. But how does that relate to us spiritually? How does that relate to us on a religious level? There's a lot of stuff that's been going on in my head, and I wanted to share that with you today. Welcome. October morning. I get outside to do my walk this morning. It is beautiful. It is gorgeous. Now, I know that sounds weird that you're saying, like, well, what's so special about a Southern California October? Very special is that it was brisk. Yes, we are not used to more than one season all year long, at least lately. I used to, as a kid, I used to look forward, you know, and you'd have different seasons. But lately, it has been just consistently hot and sunny. So this morning when I got out there for my walk, it was beautiful. It was brisk, kind of hit me in the face. And I said, this is an October that I remember. This is kind of October that I'm looking forward to.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a month.
Yes, 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 that is. Thank you, Van.
A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
Yeah, the beautiful October skies. We're looking forward to that. Tonight I'm going to be speaking at the YWCA. And I'm going to be speaking about domestic violence. It happens to be Domestic Violence Month. Or Awareness Month, let's call it that way, right? Oh, you know, I've been through this with you, too, when I did the Avon Walk. It was the Avon Walk for Breast Cancer. No, it should be called the Avon Walk Against Breast Cancer, right? But it's for breast cancer, of course. Research and eradicating the disease. And so, too, when we talk about Domestic Violence Month, it's, of course, the awareness that's important. And we'll be speaking at the YWCA. And it occurred to me that, you know, they used to call YWCA was the Young Women's Christian Association, or, yeah, Christian Association, just like the YMCA. But I believe that several years ago, I read this, and I didn't look it up. It's not that important. But I do believe that they changed the name of it from Young Men's Christian or Association to YMCA, just straight out. So the official name is YMCA, so that's how you know it, by the acronym. And perhaps you never find out what the acronym means. It's an interesting little play. But I'm going to be speaking there this evening about domestic violence, about its causes in the community. And of course, one of the answers that we had in his shoes have had towards domestic violence, and basically that's the awakening and the awareness, but changing the metaphor. And one of the beautiful icons that we have, an icon presented to us and prepared for us exclusively by artist Gregory Baylarian, is The Violence Hurts, Love Conquers. And I'm going to make sure that it's on the show notes today. So do please check out the show notes, because you'll be able to find a link to that icon. It is, you know, I take great pride in that, because a lot of times when we talk about icons, when we talk about iconography, we talk about things that have taken place in the past centuries. And we fail to realize that we are part of the church too. Yes, very, very, very important. Something that a lot of times church leadership forgets about. Church means everybody. Everybody's in the deal. And it means the past. It means the history. Yes, as much as a St. Nerses Shnorali or a Krikor Datevatsi was part of that church, you too are part of that church. And everyone brings their own talent to the collective. This is really, really important. It's a mindset that, especially in Orthodox tradition, we forget. We tend to think of the church as something that was in the past. And so based on that past, this is who we are today. No, just as much as the past, we too are part of that entire thing. I've shared this story with you many times. It was an eye-opener for me when? Back in the sixth grade. Yeah! I was 11 years old contemplating these things. I can't believe I did things like this. But we were at a camp called Clear Creek. It was a sixth grade here in the Los Angeles public schools would take us for a week, sixth grade outing to a local camp. And we went out there, and we were out at a ridge. And this is up in the Angeles Mountains. We were out on the ridge. And we were looking out, and the guide or the counselor, whoever it was, I can't remember any of the faces at that time, but I do remember this incident. The guide got very mad at us. You know, we're sixth graders, 11 years old, 12 years old. Is that what we are at sixth grade? Yeah. So we're out there yakking away and talking and everything. And the guide goes, "All right, everybody be quiet. Everybody be quiet." And what do you hear? So all of a sudden it got really quiet, and now you're out there in the wilderness. And so you're tuned now to something different. You're tuning into different sounds, right? Because when you're quiet, all of a sudden the mouth is closed and your ears are working. They're tuned up. And so you start hearing out in the distance. You hear a little bit of water falling somewhere. You hear birds. Perhaps chirping. Perhaps if you're careful enough, you can hear the fluttering of the wings. You listen, of course, you can hear the wind blowing, rustling the leaves. Perhaps you can hear somebody walking. Perhaps an animal walking. Little hoofs. And so we were listening, we were tuned in, and then like any sixth grader class or sixth grade class, there's always a class clown, right? And so it's really quiet. And some guy gets up and goes, "Bah!" You know, he starts yelling or something. And everybody breaks out in a laughter. And the teacher or the counselor, whoever was in charge, reprimanded him. And they got upset. And it occurred to me that, you know what? Wait a minute. As much as all of those sounds that we were hearing were part of that that moment, so too was this boy's voice. Right? I mean, who's to say that if there's a couple birds chirping up there, they're not joking with one another, right? Think about it for a moment, right? You listen and you say, oh, that's really nice. The birds are chirping with one another. You don't know if it's a mom yelling at his kid. You don't know if it's two friends just out for a stroll and chirping away, laughing about stuff. But we accept it because they're birds out there. We call it the quote-unquote nature, forgetting that we too are part of nature. We too are part of that experience. And we do this all the time in the church as well. We think of church as something outside of us instead of understanding that we too are part of that collective. And our contributions to the collective are very important. To the collective body of the church, it's essential. You have to be there. You have to be a participant in that collective if it's going to be known as what? A living body. See, we talk about church not as a living body. I do. Armadoxy talks about it as a living body, a living entity. And what does a living entity do? Well, think about your body. Think about your body, right? You take in all kinds of stuff. You dismiss toxins and things that don't belong in your body. And you take in those things that nurture your body. You strengthen from those things. Well, it's the same thing with Christ's body, right? There are toxins. There are things that are coming in and you need to get rid of those things. But there are also nurturing elements that come into the church. And it's up to us collectively to understand that, hey, you know, there's a hand over there. There's a heart over there. There's a lung over there. There's a liver over there. And there's a kidney over there, and you got to take in some stuff. The stomach's got to take in. The intestines have to absorb some of that, move it into the bloodstream. I mean, complicated things. Well, think about it. When St. Paul likens the church to Christ's body, well, take that metaphor to the extreme. Understand it as a body. And in that body, there are all kinds of things that are necessary for the survival of that body. Things that need to be taken in, digested sometimes. Sometimes they need to be digested to the point where you can't take it immediately, okay? You know, you eat a piece of meat, it goes down into your stomach. It takes a while for it to be digested. It takes a while. It's not immediate. So too, people coming into the church, new ideas, new concepts. Hey, you know, Armenian Church 101, AC 101. I mean, think about what we've been doing here at the Next Step. We're in our ninth year. So 8 years. We've got 8 years where we've been doing this. And people from here and there listening. We did shows called In Step with Christ. We did Armenian Church Today on video, on YouTube. All kinds of ways that we used electronic media. We branded ourselves as Epostle. Took a while, right? But now what are you seeing all around you? People are starting to use electronic media. And just this morning, our dear friend Laura in Australia sent me an email. Said, hey, Father Voskin, did you notice? Yeah. Etchmiadzin. The Mother Sea of Etchmiadzin on their Facebook page has shared our video. Mother Sea, Holy Etchmiadzin, the top sharing our video. Takes a while to digest. It takes a while, right? It might take 9 years, might take 10 years. In the grand scheme of things, that's a very little, really minuscule amount of time. Sometimes we get impatient, and hey, I'll take the first blame for that one. Very impatient. We want things done yesterday. But it takes a while. And that patience is important because that's part of the digestive process. It takes a while to digest certain ideas. Well, we got on this track because I was sharing with you that I'm going to be speaking tonight at the YWCA about domestic violence. And our dear friend Gregory Bellerian has made an icon. This was about 3 or 4 years ago. He made this beautiful icon. And to me, it is just as valid as any other icon. And you look for yourself. It's on our show notes. Press the link. Look for yourself. And it's this beautiful Mother Mary holding the child. And it says, "Violence hurts, love conquers." And that's what we offer to the conversation. Changing the metaphor. Basically that, you know, there is violence out there. And we can hit violence with violence. Or we can try something different. Try something uniquely. That is, you know, basically what our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ has told us. And we doubt it, right? We doubt it. Because how could possibly love conquer hatred? But maybe it can. And there are proofs. If you look around you and start inspecting the things that have made sense in your life, that have worked in your life, has it been because of your power and your might, or has it been because of the love that's been in your heart? That's the challenge that Christians have. And so we bring this to the table through In His Shoes, talking about the power of love, that love does conquer. The embrace, just the talk of love. And we need to start changing those metaphors. We need to start changing the dialogue if we're going to see some positive reactions out there. I my involvement in the domestic violence arena has been from many years ago. As a pastor up in San Jose, when I had 5 different women, unknown to one another, who came and shared with me their problems, and I wanted to get them to sit down as a group. They wouldn't. Not one of them wanted to meet with the other people. And through the years, I remember this has been something that has spoken to my heart, and I wanted to do something. We came up with the idea of an outreach program, a dative outreach by name. And I remember a very nice young lady came up to me 6 years ago. I remember specifically 6 years ago. And I remember it was at the end of September. And I'll tell you why I remember. Because she said, "This is a fantastic idea. I would like to go talk to the Armenian ambassador. Let him support this kind of project that you're doing within the Armenian community." I'll never forget this. And I'll never forget the day, because it was September 30th that she called me and said, "I spoke with the ambassador and he said that this is not a concern for us in the Armenian community. This is not a priority." And the reason why I remember that day is because the following day, October 1st, we woke up to the news that a young lady, Zarwi Petrosyan, had been killed, murdered by her husband and her mother-in-law in Armenia. Yeah, she was killed. Well, let's use the word, she was murdered by her husband and her mother-in-law. Murdered. And she became she is an icon today. A human icon, right? Because you look at her story and unfolds your passion for justice. A couple of years ago, 2014, I had the opportunity to be in Yerevan on October 1st, on the anniversary of her death, and I participated in domestic violence protests throughout the city. You can look back on the archives of Next Step a couple of years ago. We broadcast from over there too. We broadcast from the streets of Yerevan. First time this has happened. Yeah, and there was no Echmiel. No, Echmiazin wasn't there at the time. That's why I told you. It takes a while to digest. Now, so when we're on the Echmiazin website, on the Mother Seas website, yeah, that's pretty big, right? Takes a while to digest. Anyway, we were out there on the streets. There was no other priest. We were out there with the people, talking with the people. We broadcast. We were with the ambassador. And here's what was really eye-opening for us. What was the protest about in Yerevan? It was to get laws against domestic violence. Because basically, in Yerevan, there are no laws against domestic violence. You could basically do anything you want to your spouse, to your wife, in rare cases, to your husband. You could do anything you want, so long as you don't kill them. Because the minute you kill them, it goes under the category of murder at that point. Yes, that is a crime. But you could beat. You could yell. You could scream. You can hurt. And we stood in solidarity with our brothers, mostly sisters out there. I'm ashamed to say that, the men weren't part of it. I remember one confrontation. Do look it up. We'll try to put it up on the show notes today. I'll make a note if we can. But I remember one confrontation of one man who just said that, these things don't happen. And he said that because we had a microphone on him. And as soon as the microphone went down, he said, these women have what's coming to them. They deserve to be done like this. It was just an eye-opener for me. Again, I don't pick on Yerevan. It's 25 years now in independence. Remember, 25 years of independence since America got it. It was the 1800s. There was slavery. There was all kinds of inequality, injustices. Okay, it takes time. The digestive process. Did I come up with a name for today's show? It's the digestive process. Anyway, it takes a while. So this is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we're going to be at the YWCA this evening, and I'm very honored that they would listen in and that they would want us to be a part of that that discussion and that vigil. I'm going to take a break right now. We're going to be playing the song of the day. Before we do that, big shout out to our dear friend Adam Krikorian. You heard me talk about him a couple months ago up at the Olympics, where he was the coach of the women's water polo team. And last night they gave him the Team USA Award on NBCSN. They named him the Coach of the Games. Very, very proud of him and all of his accomplishments. We'll have a small clip on that on today's show notes. Right now, here is the song of the day. Enjoy. We'll be back in a few moments. Thank you. is called Sari Achchik. Jivan Kasparian, of course, the artist on that one, from his album In My World, I Will Have No Pain. I Have No Pain. Arguably, right, when you hear that. Anyway, I love that song because of the transition from the mellow to something vibrant, actually, living. And it's almost a metamorphosis. I don't know if you felt that in the song, but I didn't want to say that at the beginning, at the onset. Everyone takes what they can from the song. Anyway, there will be a link on today's show notes. Do check that out. Sari Achchik, the name of the song. Jivan Kasparian, internationally known for his duduk playing, one of a kind. I hope you enjoyed it. Heard of the Bradley effect. I lived through it, I do remember, and probably why it's impressionable, I'll be the first to admit it. Impressionable for me is, first of all, Tom Bradley, for whom it's named the effect, was an African-American, and he was running against an Armenian-American. This is back in the 1980s. And that Armenian-American was George Dukmejian. George Dukmejian became the governor of California, the largest or the most populous or the economically most sound, I think economically the biggest state in the Union, in that I think on a world scale, at that time at least, and I think right now it should be somewhere close to it, it's I think the fifth largest economy in the world, something like that, right? Wild. George Dukmejian became the governor. Tom Bradley, an African-American, was running against him, and all polls said that he would win. All polls said that he would win. They thought he was going to be the winner. And the next morning, we woke up to find out that George Dukmejian, sure enough, had won. And this phenomenon, let me see, if I could, thank you, the Bradley effect. I'm reading from the Wikipedia, it says, is a theory concerning observed discrepancies between voter opinion polls and election outcomes in some United States government elections, where a white candidate and a non-white candidate run against each other. The theory proposes that some voters who intend to vote for the white candidate would nevertheless tell pollsters that they are undecided or likely to vote for the non-white candidate. It is named after Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley, an African-American who lost to 1982 California governor's race despite being ahead in voter polls going into the election. Okay, I don't know if I said 1980, but 1982, that was when the election took place. And I happened to be living in Los Angeles at the time, and being much younger at the time, these kind of things really impressed me, you know. A phenomena, an effect, the Bradley effect. So basically, somebody comes up to you, and who are you going to vote for? There is a black candidate and a non-black candidate. And probably I remember because he happened to be an Armenian-American candidate. Who would you vote for? And you're going to say you vote for the black candidate because you don't want to be misconstrued as being somewhat bigoted, perhaps for a variety of reasons, but I would imagine that would be the reason, right? So you say, I'm going to vote for the black candidate. And then you go into the polling booth and you vote the other way. And so while all the polls said one way, on election day, something else happened. Now, I was thinking about that because, first of all, the phenomena is happening here again in the United States. Phenomenal, right? Last year when Donald Trump said that he was going to run for the presidency, I don't think there were too many people that took him seriously. I would even speculate that he might not have taken himself seriously, that he could have pulled this off. People thought it was a joke. And then one by one, he started winning the other candidates. He won the primaries. Now he's running against Hillary Clinton. And arguably not the best candidate out there to put up against Donald Trump, right? Anyway, he's now a contender, and there is a possibility that he can be the next president of the United States. And most people that you see around, it's exactly like the Bradley effect, at least here in California. You know, you talk to people, and people, no, we would never vote for him. We can't vote for him. We would never vote for him. And I wonder, is this the Bradley effect? Are people talking this way to pollsters? And then once they go in the booth, will they be voting another way? And the Bradley effect, right? All of a sudden, you wouldn't think it, but all of a sudden, you end up with somebody who's won the election. By the way, speaking of that, I watched Designated Survivor last night for the first time. Wow, what a great mood, what a great show that is. Actually, I just watched the pilot and then last night its episode. I've always wondered about that. You know, there is this Designated Survivor idea. Once a year, it's mandated by the Constitution of the United States that the president has to give a State of the Union address. And at that State of the Union, the President, Vice President, all the members of Congress, that's the House of Representatives, the Senate, as well as the judicial, the Supreme Court justices are there. And he addresses this joint session of Congress with everybody there, political, non-political. But one person is designated from the cabinet to be outside, just in the event, the case that, you know, there could be this incredible attack and everybody in the government would go out and then this one person would be the new president. Yeah, all these things are in place. And the premise of the show is that he's the designated survivor and that does happen. That scenario does happen. And now what? Anyway, I digress. There's a lot of politics going on because I don't want to talk about the politics today. This is leading to something more spiritual. Brexit vote. Again, political. Brexit. The British coming out of the Union, the European Union, right? Do you remember that? The night of the vote. I mean, people were saying that it wasn't going to happen. Even the people who were leading the exit from the Union, European Union, they were basically conceding. If you listened to or you followed any of that, you knew that they didn't think that it would happen. Next morning, what happens? Bradley effect. They wake up and they have voted themselves out of the European Union. What? Yes, it's exactly the Bradley effect. Governor George Duke Majan has now become the governor. Even though everybody said Bradley, they were going to vote for Bradley. Even everyone said that they were going to vote against the Brexit. Well, there is the Brexit. Donald Trump. Oh, who's going to vote for him? He's crazy. No, there's no way. But what happens? I'm scared of this. I'm scared of this phenomenon. Now, this morning I was listening to Fareed Zakaria in his weekly, what is it called? GPS? I think it's a really cool name, but it's GPS Global Political something, Square or something. In his comments, he talked about something interesting that paralleled this. A gentleman named Hides, who had a thesis that people come to decisions first, and then they find the reasoning afterwards to justify their positions. And he gave a few different cases, scenarios, in which case people will come up with a reason to support somebody, in this case, Donald Trump, against all reason. You put reason aside because you have this gut feeling that this is who you want to support. And then you find the reasons. And basically, what is this called? This is called justifying, rationalizing. Aha, now you've got it. Now this is how I'm connecting it. Because don't we do this all the time? You know, we are called to a type of life, and we know, and this is right in the church tradition, while knowing the evil, and yet I willingly gave way to it, and from good works I purposely kept away. Yeah, we say that during the confession of the church. We know what's right and wrong, but we choose the wrong, and then we somehow justify it. I've shared with you, to me, when I think about justifying absolutes, moral absolutes. What are moral absolutes? Are there certain things that are just under every condition wrong? And to me, I think that moral absolute is rape. Imposing your will upon somebody else in a violent manner. I just cannot think of any other moral absolute. I mean, even killing somebody, you could say, well, there's justified times, right? We come up with justified times. In self-defense, killing to defend your family, your country. We've come up with these. We're right or wrong, but we've come up with these kind of answers to that. Lying, and, you know, the most famous of these during World War II. The Germans, the Nazis, come into a house. Do you have any Jews over here? And they're hiding in the basement. And the guy lies to them and says, no, we don't. We don't have any Jews living here. Is it okay to lie? Of course it is. Of course. Are there any moral absolutes? Well, to me, rape would be that moral absolute. In fact, to me, this is how domestic violence, why it's unacceptable, because even within a domestic partnership, such as marriage, does that give you the right to impose your will upon another human being? Certainly not. And it can't be done that way. Okay, so we come to now rationalizing. And I would venture to say that it goes one step even further in how we rationalize ourselves in terms of our faith. People have all kinds of things that they believe in, bizarre things that they believe in, right? And you say, how could somebody believe in that? But when it comes to faith, belief systems, and certainly this is true in politics too. In fact, I'm bringing you the example from politics. I'm bringing you the example. I'll have them all in the show notes for Reed Zakaria. I'm bringing you those examples and telling you that it's the same in religion, right? Usually people will do it the other way, right? We'll say, you want to take a look at my religion. You'll see it's the same in science and politics and everything. Oh, I'm doing the other way. I'm saying it's the same in religion. We have a gut feeling that this particular belief system is right. It works for me. And then we build up what we need to justify it. We come to a decision first, and then we find the reasoning afterwards to justify it. And perhaps it's some of the most fundamental reasons why we have those decisions, why we make those decisions. Not decisions at all, but basically because of an accident of birth, right? Think about it. Let's be really, really honest. Why do most people come to faith? Most people, okay, I'm not talking about everybody in the world. I know there are exceptions, but most people come to a certain system of beliefs, a certain system of religious thought and understanding because where they were from. You know, your family's Catholic, your family's Orthodox, your family's Armenian, Greek, whatever it may be. You've fallen into that. And so you're going to be swayed that way. Now, what's happened is we have this phenomena of free expression, free thinking, and experimentation. And this phenomena is not an old phenomena, I'd say in the last 100 years or so, right? People are starting to freely think, experiment. And you start thinking. And not only thinking, I mean, we've always thought, right? But it's been okay to think. And I think this is really one of the most beautiful things that Western society, and I think in particular the United States, gives us, this ability to truly think for ourselves without a fear of punishment. Yes, it is wild. It takes people into some wild places too. But when you come using your head and not checking your head at the door, you know, this is tragically one of the big things about religion. People come to religion and think that they have to, you know, check in their brain at the door. Like, okay, I'm here, now I'm going to throw out logic. No, do it the other way around. Bring in your logic, bring in your skills. Bring in that beautiful mind that God has given you, that beautiful power to reason. Why is it that 3 plus 4 equals 7? Why is it that 12 times 12 equals 144? Why is it that there are 360 points on this circle? I mean, the fascination we have with math, mathematics, algebra, with calculus, and the way that logic plays into that. And we throw this out at the door when we come to faith, when really we should bring it in and understand that it's all part of the same system. There is a beauty, there is a wonder out there. We shouldn't be scared because we cannot define it or because we can define it. And therefore we feel like, okay, it has minimalized our belief. Minimized our belief. See, I sometimes come up with new words too here. It has minimized our belief because we have used our capacity to reason. No, just the opposite. Bring it on. Bring it on. Challenge yourself. Give yourself that opportunity to think and reason it out. And I think we do this throughout our lives. We come to decisions and then we try to justify them with the set of circumstances that we have around us, rather than understanding that we have an opportunity to really look at life. It's uncomfortable. I know it is uncomfortable. It is not a comfortable place to be, right? It's so much more comfortable to be told this is what you believe. But the real challenge is really on us, each of us, if you prefer it, of course. Yeah, it's okay. It's comfortable. Yes, this is what you believe. Take it. A lot of people do this and they're fine with it, right? But I would imagine that you're listening to the next step because you're of that type. You are that type that wants to be challenged a little bit. You don't want to put your mind in a bottle and close it up because this is religion. And how much more pleasant it is when you discover it on your own and you discover it with the reasoning powers that you do have. And you realize the limits that you have in that reasoning capacity too. Because this is really one of the biggest problems that we have as human beings, is this idea that we are the gods. Okay, that's fine. You can do anything, but you know that there are certain limitations on that everything. Just as you wouldn't go on top of a building and jump off expecting to fly. Right? There is a certain limitation that you know that those hands that you have cannot flap, don't have the aerodynamics to flap fast enough to keep you airborne. Limitation doesn't mean that you can't do anything. You can do anything. It just means that you're using your head. I mean, just this past summer, we watched the Olympics, right? You look at those Olympic athletes. Okay, they run these incredible distances in a short amount of time, and you could think to yourself, well, I could do that. But there are certain limitations. You look at their bodies, and you look at your body, take a look in the mirror at least. Okay, I'll talk to them for myself. There's no way that I resemble anybody like that. So physically, I don't have that ability to run those distances. Can I do anything? Yes, I can do anything. I've put my mind to it. But there are certain limitations that come to me from my body that I cannot escape. And that reflection will come because you use your mind. This is what I think a lot of times we don't do in religion. We sometimes fear that if we use our mind, if we use our head, we are going against what God wants us to do. He wants us to be basically zombies. Do you remember a couple weeks ago I did that AC 101 about the coffee cups? You can't believe the kind of response that we got. It went viral, right? It went viral 55,000 at this time and still counting. Different communities. I've gotten people who wrote to me from definitely tons of non-Armenians, but also non-Christian. I had Muslims writing to me, just very, very thankful that we were talking about this. But we also did get people who said that, you know, like, no, you're absolutely wrong, you know. It is written in the stars. It is written in the coffee cup. God already knows what's going to happen to you. Don't fight it. Well, do you know what that means? And this is, again, it's a head idea. Use your head and extrapolate. Go out there, okay? So if everything is already decided for you, you really don't need to do anything. Nor are you responsible for your life. God has already decided what's going to happen to you. Therefore, there is no more personal responsibility. I could just kick back. Because whatever's going to happen will happen. And certainly this isn't the way that life should be. Certainly Jesus doesn't teach this way, does he? When he talks about the talents. Otherwise, the guy who had the no talent, he would have said, oh, this is me. This is what God gave me. No. Teaches just the opposite. You can control your destiny. You can, and you should, make your life what it is. And these opportunities abound, and people are sometimes scared. Of course, there is a fear factor. It's an uncomfortable place, because it means that you are all of a sudden responsible. Hey, I told you a few moments ago, I went for the first time to court as a defendant. This is 2 years ago. I took a pilgrimage to Armenia and to what is today called Turkey, to Western Armenia. And on the way back, we got stopped at the border in Georgia. The Georgians saw us as Armenians and saw opportunity to make some money. And they pulled one of our ladies who had a 90-day supply of sleeping pills with her. And so she was detained in a country, and we made every effort to make sure she was okay, including bringing in the United States Department of Justice and the ambassador. But nevertheless, she felt that it was my responsibility, and she was asking me to take care of her expenses. Well, where is personal responsibility? Where is personal responsibility? You walk into a foreign country with a 90-day supply of narcotics, and you blame somebody else because you weren't in charge of that trip. No, at some point you need to say, I'm sorry, I am in charge. I am in charge of my life. And that begins with the idea of saying that I am more than just a heart, I'm just more than a piece of meat, but there is this capacity to reason and think things out, and I'm going to use that. And so in a long way, when you look at what's going on in the elections, and when I talked about the Bradley effect, it's really an opportunity for us to really rethink what our own belief systems are, not necessarily about politics, but about what makes us think. And in so doing, reflect about our own nature, how we interact with ourselves, with our environments, with our faith. And what is that faith to us? Is it something that we've just taken, absorbed, and now we're trying to justify it? Or something that we really believe in? The path to Armodoxy is the latter of those two options. It's one that you actually do believe, because it makes sense. It makes sense in the heart and in the brain, in the mind. That's it. The pianist has come. Piano players playing that familiar medley. So you know it's time for Susie. I'll be back in a few moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that reminder, and thank you to all of you. All of you who make this podcast what it is. I want to take an opportunity to thank Predator Cycling, the wonderful folks there who have been supporting us and have sponsored this last month's podcast of The Next Step. PredatorCycling.com is where you can check out all of their work, what they do. If you're ever down in the area, you got to check out one of their bikes. I mean, I think I've told you this before. The first time I held one, you don't pick it up with your hand. You can pick it up with your pinky. They are so light. Carbon-based. I mean, isn't that what the whole universe is? So you can see how we all click, right? You can see why they fit right into the Next Step model, the Armadox model. Anyway, Predator Cycling, a big shout out to them, wishing them all the best, and thank you for their support and their continued support of this podcast. Really love those people out there. And we thank all of you who have gone online, who have supported this podcast in different ways. Really, really appreciate it. We have, I shared with you a couple weeks ago, we're splitting things up. So the church in Glendale now has an opportunity to do its own ministry in the area, and we have an opportunity to expand a little bit. So the St. Peter Armenian Church in Glendale now has a full-time priest who's there doing the services, freeing me up to explore a lot of this electronic ministry and other types of ministry that we've been doing through In His Shoes. So it's an exciting time right now. Donations can still be made in the same way. They will be channeled through In His Shoes. Or if you want to make it specifically for this ministry, you can make it payable to the Western Diocese / St. Peter Fund. But, you know, the easiest way for all of you has always been on the website. Just go and press on that In His Shoes button, the one that says donate. I want to thank you all for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to be here. Do check out the show notes. There's all kinds of stuff on there. Check out our AC101. We're having a lot of fun with that, as if you couldn't tell. And look forward to seeing you on the net, at Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, as well as at the mothership In His Shoes. I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off-balance. Top minutes.